much more than this. I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. We get in on the text line. I still got a bunch of texts to get to. 251-343-0106. If you keep them coming, I will do my best to respond. We got a little time to kill at the top of the next hour. So give it your best shot. Joining us now here in the Fairhope Bureau, we do this every Thursday, our good buddy from the Baldwin County Republican Party, Patrick McWilliams. Patrick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here in the Fairhope Bureau. Shout out to State Chairman John Wall. You owe me a coffee because you bumped me from my spot. But
yeah, that's right. Usually you hit up the 11:30 block, and then we had to bump. He's in Milwaukee, so make some accommodations there.
Yeah, we're all looking to hear from him, the bottom of the hour, next hour, to see what the news is coming out of Milwaukee. Real quick, I wanted to address that. I was listening to your show earlier. I think this was kind of like the dress rehearsal for what we're going to see, and try to, kind of like a flex test for the city of Milwaukee, to get in line with what's coming up for the Republican National Convention. And they've been wonderful about it. Anything that I've heard coming out of from the national committee woman or man from the state GOP and State Chairman John Wall has got nothing but good things to say about Milwaukee. So they have definitely, it is a swing state, it is in play, but they have and they've voted Democrat more times than not. But at the same time, There was a thing where we wanted to go to Nashville, the RNC did, and they did a couple of presentations down there, and everybody was on board with it, the businesses were on board with it, and the city council voted it down twice. So at that point they had to look at other options, and in Milwaukee was like, hey, we'll host it. So
isn't that funny though? That, most cities would just die for that opportunity, and Nashville I guess they have a lot of visitors, but I don't know, Milwaukee is a place, when would you ever go to Milwaukee for anything unless it was something like that, I suppose.
But here's the thing with that. I've heard a lot of people that have been to Milwaukee recently that said that they've done a lot downtown. And believe it or not, it's actually a pretty cool. They got a couple of pretty cool venues down there now. So hey, let's. I'm planning hopefully to be there for the national convention. So more to follow on that. But I think that's something that is a good thing for all of us. So for your listeners, I think this was more of like a stress test to see how they would do with a big event. And, just to get them in line and make sure, and have some lessons learned going into, how to prepare for the Republican National Convention.
Well, it's not necessarily an indictment on Milwaukee. I guess I get it. It's politically important, and we need to win it as Republicans. And it can be won. I mean, and just look at Scott Walker and everything that's gone up there. I mean, obviously Trump won in 2016.
He sure did.
I don't know, just a peculiar place to kick things off for 2024, but fine. I mean, I don't know why Milwaukee, I guess why anywhere would be the question. Because typically, Patrick, if I recall, they would start in New Hampshire or Iowa, and they would do something there. That would always seem to be, that's the first state, but Republicans doing things a little differently this time around.
I think it's good to change it up. I think we could all agree that Iowa is retail politics at its best. And so is New Hampshire. You've really got to get in there, and you got to go to all 99 counties and in Iowa and talk to the people and really sit down and listen to what their issues are, and then go from there. And the people, the candidates that do that, especially in Iowa, you know, it's kind of that first, it's that first look, if you're a presidential candidate, as far as, hey, are we on track with what the, you know, with what the tone is of the messaging coming out of our campaign? You know, and they adjust accordingly out of that. So, and the same with New Hampshire. You know, and let's face it, by the time, if you're not on track by the time you get to South Carolina, then, you know, South Carolina sometimes, can be high noon for a candidate. But, you know, I think realistically looking at the landscape for this coming, primary, national primary, I think Super Tuesday, which we're involved in, is going to be, is where the rubber is going to meet the road as far as, the presidential candidate. I think that's the day that we're going to find out exactly who's going to be the front runner.
Well, and, you know, you got two South Carolina candidates. I mean, but let me tell you, Patrick, I mean, even by then, I mean, look at this. The way this race is going and the way just Trump's running away with it, are we looking at reading into this stuff too much? Are we paying attention? I mean, it's always good to pay attention to civics and current affairs, I get that, but are we playing this up in our heads a little too much, the relevancy of these other eight candidates on that stage, as if they even have a chance right now?
This is one thing that if you take a look at what happens with these candidates, okay, even if they don't become or a viable candidate for president, some of them are going to wind up on a cabinet position. So it is in their best interest to get their name out there. And, you know, that way, and let's say it, you know, none of them are going to admit it right now, but somebody in that eight is running for vice president.
Right. Well, that's I think probably a lot of them are running for vice president.
Yeah.
I think Tim Scott, I think Nikki Haley. I don't know what to make of the Ramaswamy. Obviously, I don't think DeSantis is. DeSantis can't be. It's Trump because he can't be from the same state. Pence won't take the job again. There's no way it'd be offered to him. And then the others, no one's knocking on Chris Christie, Asa Hutchinson, or Doug Burgum's door. So, maybe two or three are really running for vice president.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, when you start seeing, especially, you know, as and it's kind of hard for these moderators to control debate now because it's like corralling horses. So once they get out of the, you know, once they get out of the corral, it's hard to get them back in. So yeah, we saw a little bit of that last night. I was honestly a little underwhelmed with the questions that were asked. I was listening earlier, and I agree. I think there needed to be some harder questions going down, and you know, not so much the DNC's political agenda with climate change. You know, because let's face it, with you know, if we're gonna pander to you know, and react to what the DNC is saying about, you know, things like that. Okay, now let's all go buy an electric vehicle right now and just wait for the next hurricane to hit because it's global warming. It's doing everything.
And well, so, we're fed this conventional wisdom that that's what young people care about. And look, I mean, that's not your rank and file Republican primary voter. And doing things like that, the way they're doing that, I'm just so put off by the assumptions that we have to talk about climate change, January 6th. To have this universal view on abortion, the sort of more pro-choice leading direction, that's not what your average. Those three topics are not on the top 50. I'm convinced of what Republicans, primary voters, would traditionally care about. They may care about, do you believe in climate change? Do you think it's a hoax? Or they may care about what you think about abortion or whatever, but they're not. These aren't things that are keeping people up at night. They really, maybe abortion policy, but that's another discussion. But it's not like, oh my God, the world's going to end. What about the poor penguin? We're not doing that. But Fox News sort of missed that one, I thought.
Well, they did. In my opinion, they did. You know, let's not forget the question about UFOs, now UAPs. you know, at, you know, I was kind of like, really, are we asking this in a debate? that just kind of floored me a little bit. But I, you know, the one that got me was, I wanted to hear more about kitchen table issues. I wanted to hear more about what are you going to do to get the economy back going? Okay. Because what are you doing to get the American worker, better wages? What are you going to do about the dreaming, you know, about the American dream of home ownership? Because right now, the, you know, a lot of that's out of reach. You know, I personally, for me, you know, I don't like going to the grocery store anymore because, you know, every time I, you know, get a $400 grocery bill and, you know, I look at the cart and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I was paying a lot less a couple of years ago than what we are now, you know, and I think, you know, and you take a look at the price of gas as well. And those are the issues that are resonating with a lot of people. And I think we really, you know, I think that that kind of got missed last night. And we need to regroup. I think with the next debate, that is something that is really going to be some key issues that they really need to look at and drive. As opposed to, yes, we've got foreign policy issues right now. Yes, I do believe that we're eventually going to have to go into Mexico at some point and clean out those cartels and work with their government. I think that's that was spot on. You know, I did. There were a couple of issues that came up. You know, I think education is one that really needs to be at the forefront as well to put families back in charge of, you know, being the first line of educator for their children. You know, so there were some good points made last night, but, you know, you take a look at that, and then I checked the Twitter count or Twitter now X count for the Tucker Carlson former President Trump interview, and it was at 200 million.
I don't believe that for a moment. I don't believe 200 million people watched that.
Well, I think a lot of people actually, you know, they went to it multiple times, but you know, it just. But let's cut that in half, or let's cut that in a quarter. Okay, so if you want to say that, let's say 50 million people watched that interview.
I mean, sure. I don't know. I, you know, because I don't know how Elon Musk is. It, if it just kind of you're scrolling by it and you see it and it starts, yeah. You know, does that count? But 200 million.
But it may have been, you know, and you bring up a good point.
A lot of people watched it, and I'm sure more people watched it than watched that debate. That's an important point. That's no small thing. Even if like 10 million people watched it or 20 million or whatever. It's no small deal that they're watching Trump and not what happened on Fox News last night. But, I mean, the guy's up by 40 points. I mean, it would make it stands to reason that he's going to get more eyeballs no matter where he shows up.
Well, the other thing is that it's the old rule of politics that if you're up and especially if you're an incumbent, okay, never give your opponents a chance to bring you down. Okay, never give them an opportunity to get in front of them and, you know, and basically face them head on, which I know is something for Trump because Trump likes to, you know, he likes to do that. Former president likes to get in there and he likes to mix it up. I mean, let's go look at what happened with, you know, Caitlin Collins and CNN. I mean, he got on there and mixed it up.
He did. And you kind of like, what are you doing? Why are you going on CNN? And, you feel better about where he is and him doing it than you would probably a lot of other Republicans, right?
Oh yeah, I mean he thrives on it. You know he's gonna stick his head in the lion's mouth. So and he thrives on it, and you know that's one thing that I will say about him is that he does not shy away from a good fight. And as we saw some of the other candidates, for good, bad, or for worse, there were some ones that there was some heated debate last night. You know, the one thing I was glad to see is that, and I will say this, is that there were attacks, but they really didn't get all that personal. It was more about, you know, hey, you're, you know, you may not be as qualified as you think you are. Okay, that's fine. All right. Tell me your reasons why you think that. But, you know, I think that was one of the good things. And that's the one thing I do not like, is let's, we could talk about the debates. We can argue the debates. All right, but let's not personally mudsling against each other.
There's a little of that. And I think that's what, I mean, I think some people want to see that. It's just a juvenile impulse that they like to see that mix up. But Chris Christie up there on the stage, I mean, that's all I figure he's, the only reason he's up there, right?
Yeah, I kind of wondered that myself. You know, I don't want to talk ill of any of the candidates, you know, because I do, you know, being a GOP party official, I want to obviously remain neutral, and I do hold that near and dear to my heart. But I will say that there were candidates up there that I believe that should not have been on that platform. And, you know, it became glaringly clear to everybody as the night wore on, and we saw who was leading the charge and who was, you know, who was driving the issues and who was speaking up and who was the ones that were, you know, kind of just not there. Okay, there's a difference, and I agree with you, Jeff, on the thing of you don't have to always speak, okay? Just because you may be the smartest guy in the room doesn't mean you always have to let everybody know that.
Right.
And I think we saw a little bit of that as well. But when the time for that candidate to speak was, you know, he let them have it with both barrels. So,
and making the most of those opportunities, and it's always been my struggle with DeSantis. I know the kind of guy he is, and he's a genius. I mean, he really is. You talk to him. I'm not impressed by many people in politics. I tend to even think less of them than I probably should. I mean, it just kind of because of the nature of the business I'm in. But at face value, a guy like him doesn't talk a lot. He's back there observing. And then you sit down with him and you talk to him, and it's like, okay, he gets it. Oh, he really gets it. Oh, he is just, he, you know, there's that guy that is sort of not as, he's soft-spoken or whatever you want to call it. That's what I think of the way DeSantis sort of operates.
This is what I'm going to tell you about DeSantis. Let's call this like it is. DeSantis is a former naval JAG officer who was basically dealing with rules of engagement in a war zone for a Navy SEAL team. Okay, making sure that when they went out on a mission, and if they had to, you know, they had to be in direct action, that, you know, they were going to do it. And that's the mindset that he takes.
Yeah, I think so. He's not a blowhard or too bombastic. Let's get a break in here real quick. We'll pick it up on the other side in just a moment. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, coming up in about 45 minutes or so. Still with us, chairman of the Baldwin County Republican Party, Patrick McWilliams, in studio here at the Faro Bureau. Patrick, real quick, this is going to be a quick segment, but Space Command, you've been listening to the program and what different people have said. You don't think that it's necessarily out of play for Alabama just yet?
No, it's not. I've spoken with the staffs of Senator Katie Britt, Senator Tuberville, I've actually spoken with Congressman Carl about it, and Congressman Rogers. And the one thing that we all need to think about is by law, okay, they have completed two studies and named Huntsville as the Space Command. You know, as the number one choice for Space Command. Okay, and, you know, you had Congressman Strong on last hour, and I think he said it best a couple of weeks ago when I heard him speak, is that you don't take, you don't take the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter and give it to the fifth best, you know, airplane manufacturer or defense contractor. Okay, so you go with your number one choice. Okay, and a lot of people need to understand this thing is not going to happen overnight. Okay, you got to get manning requirements together. You know, you got to do facility management. You've got, there's all kinds of feasibility studies that go along with this that have, that are required by law, and then it has to be reported to Congress. So they, you know, that, you know, I heard Dale Jackson say a couple weeks ago, he's like, this thing is over. It's not over.
It's not over. No, we're watching it. It's kind of fascinating. But we saw this with a tanker contract, too.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming back by, and we'll do this again next week.
Great to be here.
All right, let's get a break here. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.